Okay, we'll start. I think it's good to do one long meditation first. And so I thought I would go to the Gomrim, the stages of meditation by Kamala Shila. And I thought you'd like to just hear what it sounds like. Because this is the book in three parts, three short books, which are the basis of all meditation in Tibet and the basis of this poster. I'm going to go to the third Gomrim because that's the one that talks about technique the most, okay? The first book talks mainly about compassion. Almost the whole book is about compassion. And it's very beautiful. It would be nice to translate someday. It's very beautiful. He goes through a long description of the sufferings of the lower realms. So there's a long description of the hell realms and how people are suffering from burning and freezing. And then there's a long description of the spirit, hungry spirits, and how much they suffer from hunger and thirst and uncertainty. And then there's a long description of animal realm and how they mainly hurt each other, that it's a realm of where beings are hurting each other, eating each other. Then he gets to the human realm and he says, he asks a rhetorical question. He says, is it so much different from those other three? You know? He says, people are getting burned and frozen, you know, in wars, for example. And people are have hunger and thirst all over the world, like hungry ghosts. And people are... The society is abusing people and making them work like animals. Rosa knows about that. But, you know, is it so different in our realm? You know, so people are being burnt and people are being enslaved and people are hurting each other and people are hungry. And he goes into it. You know, almost the whole book is about compassion. And then he says, compassion is the karma for shamatha, okay? Compassion is the karma for shamatha, and it's also the motivation to get shamatha, because then you can become a Buddha. But with shamatha, you need what? Vipassana, understanding emptiness. So the second Gomrim, the second book of his meditation triad? Trilogy. Who said that?
Scott said it first, and I said it second.
The second book of his trilogy is the emptiness, all emptiness. It's all about Vipassana. And it's interesting that somebody should do a study, some graduate student at the Sedona College should do a study between that and an earlier Bhavanakrama, an earlier Gomrim, which was written by Nagarjuna. So Nagarjuna wrote a book called Stages of Meditation. And that's mostly a study of Vipassana, of emptiness. And it'd be very interesting to compare the second book of the trilogy to Nagarjuna. I think maybe that's why he named his book the same. So he lived 1,500 years after Nagarjuna. So it's kind of cool. Then the third book is technique, meditation technique. And so I want you to think of shamatha in terms of the karma that you need to get it. It's at the bottom, cause of cause. And then there's conditions like a nice beach in Thailand where it's quiet, where you can meditate easily. And it's pleasant. And then inner technique, mental technique. So, and if you think about it, these two are caused by this one. You see what I mean? The karma creates the conditions. The karma creates a nice meditation cottage at Diamond Mountain. I like Michael was said unique. That's such a good publicity thing. We may be rustic, but we're unique. You gotta have something. So the compassion creates the circumstances. You know, it stops the garbage trucks outside your house at 6 o'clock in the morning. They break down at the end of the street if you're in New York. And then that also causes the success of the inner techniques of trying to detect dullness, trying to detect agitation, trying to block them. Okay, so he gives it this kind of causal thing. The compassion creates the conditions and allows the technique to work. Okay, the inner technique. It's very cool. So I thought you might like to hear something. We'll start on his technique from his own book. This is the mother book of all meditation in Tibet. He bases his largely on a sutra. Which one? What sutra talks about meditation?
King of Concentration.
Huh?
King of Concentration.
Yeah, Samadhi Raja. Samadhi Raja. The King of Concentration. King of Meditation. So it'd be fun to go through that sutra someday. You know. Okay, so here, I'm just going to read you a small piece and then we'll meditate, okay? Because he's starting on his technique. Third book of the trilogy. There's a fourth book I haven't explored yet. It's a mysterious. Okay. It's called Meditation for Yogis. I don't know. Okay. Dela Nanjorpe Shinedan Paktongi Tsok. If you wanna get shamatha and vipassana, you have to collect the karma. Tsutin number Dapala Sopa, one of those causes is not disturbing the minds of other people. Okay? Not disturbing the minds of other people. And I think if you're gonna be a good meditator to make the karma, you have to be super sensitive to other people's reactions to what you say and what you do. You see, so you watch, you learn to watch them. You pick up signs like their eyes go like that. You know, like you're like, "Would you like to make me hot chocolate?" And they're like, "Yeah, yeah." And then you get, if you're gonna be a good meditator, you have to be very sensitive to how other people are feeling. And your whole life is watching how they feel, observing what they need, and making them happy. You know, even little things like how much honey do they take in their coffee and stuff like that. And then those are the causes. When you get on your cushion, the techniques work for you. You see what I mean? So in DCI language, we call it crystal legs. It means, it comes from a scripture. Everybody's in here, between the sides of your skull, it's as if everyone has a lake, a beautiful Swiss Geneva lake, you know, totally clean, pure. And they walk around with this lake in their mind. And then if they get upset in the morning, you know, like if they can't find their toothpaste, then their mind gets a little like Lake Geneva with a breeze on it. And then the first person they meet whose mind is still, it spreads. It's, what do you call it?
Contagious.
Catchy. Contagious, yeah. Like if I'm a little off balance and I meet you, and it seems to be the more off balance person affects the less off balance person. So if my mind's a little bit upset because I couldn't find my toothpaste this morning, then, and I meet, the first time I meet somebody in the morning, my shaky leg shakes up their leg. So the karmic cause of shamatha is to do the opposite. Even if you're not feeling well or you're not feeling so happy or something just went wrong in your life, which happens once in a while, you try to make other people's minds calm. Even if you don't feel so calm, okay? And on the outside, you're just like very calm. And you know, on the inside, you're like worrying about this cabin, the water broke. And, you know, but outside, you're just like, yeah, everything's fine. And then that respect for other people's peace of mind is the karmic cause of shamatha. And without that, the other two don't matter. You can have a good cushion, and you can study the meditation poster for a year, and you're still going to have lousy meditation because you don't have the karmic cause, okay? The base cause. Nepate semchen la ningje chenpo ke te. And the second karmic cause, first karmic cause is respecting other people's peaceful mind. And then the second karmic cause is Ningje Chenpo. Yeah, Maha Karuna. Yeah, compassion. A concern for other people's ultimate welfare. Not just that they're happy this morning, but that they don't go to the hell realms or that they reach. So you got to get really good at explaining the pen, right? You could keep some people, you could keep a lot of people out of the hell realms. Okay? So just bore people to death. Teach it over and over. Okay? Carry one with you. Chenpo ke te. So, compassion. Changju de semke ne. Have this intention to save the world by becoming a Buddha. Tepa dan sambana gombala jarwar chao. And before you meditate, finish the process of Te Sam Gom. Okay? Go to lots of classes. Go to as many classes as you can. Study as many books as you can. Then Sam, like what you hear in the class, thrash it? Thrash it out with other people. In a coffee shop at the Julieta Blue Sky Dome. We're trying to build a coffee shop in Sedona next to the college because that's where people... That's called Te Sam. Sam means you sit with your friends and you say, Geshe Michael said this thing this morning, but it doesn't make any sense to me. And your friend says, yeah, it didn't make any sense, so don't worry about it. And, you know, so, but you work with your friends and you tear it apart and you work it out until you're satisfied with it. And then gom. Then you can meditate on it. Then Kamala Shila, in another of his books, he has a long thing about don't go into a meditation without the Te and the Sam. You know, that's really the third one. Meditate on after you've questioned it, after you've heard about it. But don't go into meditation with no ammunition. Don't go into meditation with nothing to meditate about. Okay, you're going to meditate about what you discussed with your friends after you heard it in the class. So he's very adamant, don't go into a meditation with no object, you know. And I think that happens a lot in the West. Like, in China, you meditated for 5,000 years. In America, we meditated for 50 years. 1%. And so we have all these weird ideas about meditation, you know. And oftentimes in America, we don't have training, so we go into a meditation with nothing to meditate about. We're just like, you know, but we don't have an object in mind, okay? Choosing the object is half of the meditation challenge. Dela neondorpe gombe duna topma jawa chi yopa tamje yonza zopa chela. Any neondorpa, yogi, okay, any yogi who wants to meditate, togmar, first, they should chawachi yopatamji yonsu zopache. Finish all your projects before you go into meditation. Or, you know, get your, you know, finish all this, the work. Don't go into meditation with some work on your mind. Okay, finish it first, he says. This is Kamala Shila. This is really weird. It took me like half an hour to figure it out. I was asking Veronica. By the way, Veronica says she will give massages to whoever needs them. Give your name to Jigme, and you're first on the list, I think.
Really? Cool.
You asked, I think. So she can't do endless, it takes like 2 hours, but if you're having a hard time and you're not, your body's hurting or you feel nervous, Lung, then give your name to Jigme and we'll schedule you, we'll try to get you in for a massage. Okay, we have an expert here. Okay. Then he says, Shangji chela daitserma mepa, yidu onwe chok. You should go to a yidu onwe chok. What's chok? Pa payata cha naro chogasa chok.
Direction.
Good. He's my human dictionary. chok means direction. Yiong, like you guys know yiong jampa. Where it's the kind of love that sees everyone as their own child. So beautiful. That's beautiful. So yiong means beautiful. So what's a yiong chok?
Beautiful direction.
Yeah, go to a fantastic place. Then he describes it. It's really funny. He's kind of funny. I don't know why I have the karma to meet him. It's okay if you go to a place that's filled with sheng and qi. Shit and pee-pee. If your room is full of poo-poo and pee-pee, that's fine. That's an attractive place. Okay? I'm like, what? And then he says, but there should be no daitserma. Daitserma. Serma means a cactus thorn. Okay? And da?
Sound noise.
Noise. Okay? So an attractive place in meditation means quiet. It can be filled with poo-poo pee-pee. That's okay, because you're not going to worry about that. That's not going to bother you. You can clip your nose. But it should be quiet. You know, that's what a meditator's, what do you call it? Bread and butter is a quiet place. You know, it's a quiet place. And this Diamond Mountain is quiet. It's got rocks and snakes and cactus, but it's quiet. Okay, it's super, this is the quietest place I've ever been to. Okay, so this is a beautiful place. Okay? Then have this intention to bring everybody to enlightenment. And we're going to talk about that a lot in the Diamond Cutter Sutra today, okay? In the Jinkan Jing. Yongsu Samshing Jowata Dak Dunbe Sambachin Ki Ningje Chembo Munduche. Bring up thoughts of compassion for how much pain is in the minds of most people. Okay. Now he says there's certain things you should do before you start to meditate. Look, now we're getting into technique, okay? Number one, see if you recognize them. Chok Chuna Shu. You know this?
Yeah, all the blues in the 10 directions.
Yeah, that's how the sojong starts in the monastery. 3,000 monks going, and they always take a young man whose voice hasn't changed yet, and he goes, he sings it alone. He sings the first verse alone. It means all the Buddhas in the 10 directions. Chanju Semba. Bodhisattvas. Tamje La. Chakthelo. With the yen lak na.
The five limbs.
Yeah, what's that mean?
Prostration.
What's a five part prostration? Yeah, two hands, two knees, and your head. Okay, that's a full prostration. Well, I guess it could not be. Okay, so bow down to the Buddhists and Bodhisattvas. First meditation. First thing you do in a meditation. Second. Sangye dan chaju sembe kusuk rimo la sokpa dundu shaks kam shendu yang rung de. You can put an image in front of you, like a statue or a painting. Or you can imagine them in front of you. And chi nuki means as much as your means allow. Chupa.
Offering.
Yeah, put offerings out for them. Okay, flowers, water, cakes. We have a pineapple upside down cake going there. Chinu, chupa, chupa. Okay, make offerings. Third one. Rangi dikpa shak.
Confess.
Yeah, confess your negative deeds. Okay. Shak means what? Do you know?
Split wood.
Yeah, like when you take a hatchet and you split wood and it goes whack. So it means be honest and be sincere. You can do it in your mind. You don't have to tell anybody what a nasty thing you did yesterday when you're by yourself in your room. But when you're talking to your lama in your head, you should shakpa, because they can see it anyway. You might as well shakpa. Fourth, doa tadaki sinam la jeso yirang. Yeah, rejoice in all the good of yourself and other people. What are those?
Seven.
It's pretty much the Georgia, okay? It's pretty much the first of the three treasures. Okay? There's two that he didn't mention. Yeah, ask him to stay, ask him to teach, and then dedicate. Okay, he didn't mention those. But you can see how ...700 years before Tsongkhapa, the Georgia is forming up. Okay, last thing, then we'll meditate. Okay, I'm just going to give you a little gomrim every day. Bhavana Krama. Ten Shindu Jamba Dewa La. Ten here means a den, like Dorje Den.
Position.
Yeah, a seat. Asana, it's Vajrasana, right? Asana can mean seat also. Shindu Jamba.
Very loving.
Very soft.
No.
Manju. Very Manju means soft, like silk or velvet. Okay. Dewa, comfortable. Okay. La, on a comfortable meditation seat, and you have to find your own and keep experimenting. Keep trying different ones. After 10 years, you find the one that's best for you. I love these. I highly recommend these. These have what's inside?
Buckwheat.
It have little grains inside. So my butt is like all messed up, and it takes the shape of your butt, you know. So I really like this one, but I have a friend who uses a piece of wood, and some people. Lama Devora has three cushions. And I like to put one of these here on my lap, because then my hands are like this and they're not like this. So I have two of these. I put one here. I put it here and I stretch it out to here, and I can. And then my hands are here and they're not like, I'm not like that. But you have to experiment. But he says, Jam Dewa. Comfortable and soft. Okay. Then he said, there's this deity. I'm going to show you a picture of him. Where is he? It's an old picture. So there's an old deity. His name is Vairochana. You see where we're going? And he says, Vairochana always sits in a full lotus. Okay, so look at his feet. He says, but Vairochana is a good example for us when we want to meditate. The way he holds his feet is very good, you know. So Kyumotung means a full lotus, Kyutung. Or Tabuam Kyumotung Chega.
Half.
Yeah, half lotus. Okay. So even in ancient Sanskrit it's half lotus. Do young either one, full lotus or half lotus. But he says half lotus is best, and that's use the one that you see Vairochana doing. Okay. Which foot is up? He's got his left foot up first. Okay. If you want to have a useless argument with a Hindu, you can do the right foot, left foot thing. I don't think it matters too much. But you pull the left foot in first, and then you pull the right foot in. But like Dharma Mitra does it the opposite, and that's fine. He seems to be okay. But if you want to, you know, get sectarian, you can argue about that. Okay. Second. So that's how to put your legs. And that's probably why the eight-point posture became called Vairochana's posture. It was because of the lotus. And then it got confused to everything. You see what I mean? I think so. Mik hajang miye, hajang mizum. Don't open your eyes too wide and don't close them too tight. Okay. Naitse morte. Focus them loosely on the level of your nose, not on the tip of your nose, because that will hurt your eyes. Okay. And some people who didn't know Sanskrit very well, they read this and they're like, okay. It means focus here. Don't focus on the ground. And don't focus on your hands. Like, focus here. Which is what you do when you're thinking about your boyfriend in high school. Okay? You're not looking at the ceiling. Your eyes are unfocused. And that's good for concentration. Okay? You're not looking at the ceiling. Okay? Your eyes are unfocused. Okay? You can play around that. You can use that as a drishti in yoga also. You can play around with it and see how it feels. Okay, so that's your eyes. We got how many so far? Two things, right? Third one. Lu hajang migu hajang migye. Gu means this. Gye means this. Hajang means too much. So don't hajang gu. Don't hajang gye. Okay, so this refers to your spine. Changbor sang. Keep it straight. That's kinesthetic misapprehension. I remembered the word. It's what's that guy's name? I don't know. He's a dance master who died long ago. But I mean, of course, your spine is curved in three places, but it feels straight.
Balancing?
Huh?
Balancing?
No.
Balancing?
No. He teaches a special technique. What? Alexander technique. Dhamma Nangdi Shakti. And then collect your thoughts. And we're going to talk more about that because the Buddha collects his thoughts next in the Diamond Cutter Sutra. We'll talk about that. Next. Chakpa Nyambar Shak. Yeah, it's interesting though because he uses the verb samapati, which is the verb for balanced meditation. But he's saying, make sure your shoulders are level. So the word for meditation in Sanskrit means keep it level. Okay. So dong chu. So means your teeth, and chu means your lips. Tamel par shako. Tamel means normal, right? It's a tantric expression, right? Tamel nungshen. To be attached to the normal. But here it means just the way it always, you know, don't think about it. Just let them relax. Don't do anything with them. Wherever your teeth go, let them go. Wherever your tongue and your lips go, let them go there. Okay, so that was the sixth one, I think. Next, ukchi nang tu gyua yang dra chen dang. The passing of your breath in and out should not have da. Yeah, it should be silent. There's two levels of that. One is a gross noise that you make when you breathe, and one is the noise of air passing your hairs in your nose. And as you get better at meditation, you will detect the second, and then it will stop. Okay, so don't let your breath be noisy. Namba, don't let it be irregular. Should be the inhale and exhale should be smooth. And ukkapachen, like don't get don't have a coffee before you meditate, and then your breath is like a little bit crazy. Gupachen means crazy. Monkeys are called mirga. Apes are called mirga. Crazy people. So your breath shouldn't be shaky. Okay. Chendu mitangi. Chine kyang mitsora tel but lungi tu petsun. As far as you can do it, slow your breath down and make long exhales. Okay, long exhales. So that's your first taste of the gomrim. Okay, and we'll try. Now we'll try. He's missing one of the eight. I figured it out because I had a half an hour and I had my computer.
Yeah.
Which one?
Tongue.
Huh? That included in the mouth.
Face, eyes, belly.
He covered the eyes. Did he cover the eyes?
Yes.
Yeah, your hands. He doesn't talk about your hands. So, okay, you can write to him and complain. Okay. Okay. I was like, he's missing one, but I couldn't figure it out for a while. Probably the student forgot to write it down. Okay, so let's meditate. There's a little guy here. There's a little bit here. Push it. Yeah, just push it down. Yeah. You okay, Jinjin? Better? I think she got a little dizzy. So as far as technique, we did yesterday just letting stillness be the object of your meditation. So the stillness of your body. And I'd like you to do that every day, okay? This week, do at least like 20 minutes and take as your object your own body and focus on your body and see if you cannot move any part of it, like your eyebrow or your fingers or, okay, a little bit of movement in your, where is okay, your chest. You have to breathe. By the way, if your meditation gets really good, the breath stops, which proves that you are not sustained by oxygen. Okay. So, starting today and every day, one pretty long session, 15, 20 minutes on where the body is the object of the meditation and you don't move it. Now we're going to add to that another meditation of about 20 minutes about your breath, watching your breath as a preliminary, as a warm-up, okay? But I want you to do it a special way. This is from Naropa. And I find it very helpful for focusing in meditation, okay? So try this out this week. Give it a try, okay? This is a special way to watch your breath. So bring your mind to your forehead. And feel your two eyebrows. And then go towards the center of your head and you see between the two eyebrows is a spot. And then go up the forehead about an inch, like a centimeter and a half, I guess. And focus on that spot, like third eye, Bruvor Madhya. And if you want to get really fancy, go into your skull about half an inch, and the focus gets very nice, because you're touching a chakra, a minor chakra. So you can move your focus around like a flashlight. That part of your head inside your skull, maybe half an inch. But see if you can find a place with your focus that when you bring your mind there, right away you feel deeper. The meditation feels deeper. So experiment. Go to the left, go to the right, go up, go down, go in, go deeper, come out. See if you can find a spot in the lower part of your forehead, between your eyebrows, on that line, where it gets a lot easier to concentrate. So I'm going to give you a few minutes here. See if you can find this place. Don't scrunch up your forehead. Don't get your forehead should be loose. You shouldn't wrinkle your forehead. Like, stay loose and stay focused. We'll stay here for 5-10 minutes. Move around, see if you find a better spot. Everybody's body is different. When you find the spot, relax, stay there. And don't wrinkle your forehead, don't tighten your forehead. Now keep your eyes closed, but please add the breath, the exhale, coming out of that place in your forehead. So the breath is coming out of your nose, but imagine that it's coming out of the place in your forehead. And when you exhale, the breath is coming out of your forehead. And you can play around with extending it further and further. So in meditation, long exhales tend to calm you down, and long inhales tend to agitate you. So focus on a long, slow, leisurely exhale through the space in your forehead, and ignore the gross breath coming through your nostrils. This is where your prana is leaving the body when you breathe. We'll stay here for about, I don't know, 5 minutes or something. Long exhales through your forehead. Don't worry about the inhales. Try not to move your body. Then slowly open your eyes. Take a stretch. We're about halfway through. Next part, I'd like you to imagine that the breath is coming out here because you're pushing it from here. Okay? So lower belly. Like even below your navel. Okay? So imagine that you are squeezing here and you're pulling in here and it causes the breath to go out like, and the breath comes out here. So it goes up the body, up the spine, and it comes out here. Okay? So be aware of the tightening your lower stomach. Dantian?
Dantian.
There's a word in yoga also. It's khanda or something. Khanda? I don't know. I'll look it up. Yeah, same thing. There's a center here. And you squeeze it in. And then it forces the prana to come out of your forehead. Okay, so you're going to be aware of the tightening of the lower stomach, lower abdominal muscles. And then that brings the breath out here. Okay? So we'll do that. We'll do that for the same, like, 5 minutes. Okay? So now you're pressing in the lower abdomen. And it forces the prana out your forehead, okay? And that's super good for your health, okay? It's like really, really good for your health. Ladies' health, especially. Men also. Okay. It does something to you, okay? Okay? Ready? Okay, try not to move, because when you move it disturbs other people, okay? If your body hurts, tell it to go to hell. Just divorce yourself from the body, okay? I think if you're really going to meditate seriously, you have to learn to ignore it, okay? When your knees hurt or your feet fall asleep, like, don't get up fast, right, hustle? But there'll be some pins and needles and pins. And then it goes away, and then you can sit there for 5 hours because you can't feel anything. But you got to get through that pins and needles. Okay. Okay. Here we go. Please don't move. Find that place in your forehead. Move your focus around until you touch something, until you feel something that takes your mind deeper. Try higher, try lower, try deeper. Keep your eyelids soft, keep your forehead soft. If you tighten up, you'll get a headache. And the exhales are coming out now. Follow the exhales out. Long, relaxed exhales. Fang song exhales. And don't worry about the inhales. And now connect it to your lower abdomen. Feel how it contracts and then the prana comes out the forehead. I will stay here for about 5 minutes. contract, exhale. Don't go crazy, just a light contraction. Okay, you can open your eyes. Can you stand up? Yeah, it's okay. Be careful. You want to wait for a minute? Okay, just stay there. Now we're going to work on the inhale, okay? Come closer. And I want you to feel it coming down your back, okay? So there, you have two side channels here, right? Ida and Pingala. Then I want, when you do the inhale, I want you to feel like energy collecting in your shoulder here, and then it gets thinner and thinner and thinner, and then it connects into the belly and it comes out again. So the exhale is coming up through the Sushumna. What's the other name? Start with DH. Duty, okay.
Avaduti.
So it's the exhale is going to come up the middle of the spine, okay? But the inhale, like feel the energy, the prana coming like your shoulder blade is a triangle, right? So it's a little bit wider here, and then it gets thinner as it goes down, okay? And then your belly pushes it out again, okay? So that's going to open up your two side channels. So the inhale is coming down the Ida and the Pingala, okay? Inhale is coming down the two side channels. Then they down here they connect into the central channel. So when you exhale, your lower belly goes in, and the breath comes out and then comes out here, okay? So don't worry about it coming in here or something like that. You can think of it coming in at the top of your shoulders, okay? And feel it wide, and then it gets narrower, and then it comes out of here. Okay. All right. Then we have a whole cycle, like the breath coming in, and then it's connecting into the central channel, and then you're pushing, and it comes out here. Okay. Good. Feel okay? Any questions? Any questions? Don't get tight here. Okay. Don't like. No, because it when you focus here, it tends to get tight, and then you're gonna have a headache. Okay, question. Which one? It's like you have wings in the back. It's like you have angel wings. Really, you can imagine that. It's very nice, like you're like, you know, like you have wings like an angel, and you feel the air when you breathe in. It's coming here, down, from like this.
Two side channels.
Yeah, so don't think two little tiny side channels like that. Think broad at the shoulders, in the back, and then it collects down, and then it comes up through the center channel and comes out here, okay? So it's like... Okay, like that. Cool. And you'll find a nice effect on your side channels. Okay. And you can think of wings. And open your, what do you call, shoulder blades. When you inhale, like... I mean, not so exaggerated. Hassle?
When you say contraction of the abs,
yeah.
It's just the natural cooling.
Yeah.
With the breath, it's not like...
Not yeah, don't go... but a slight, just a slight thing, you know.
Just go out.
And this muscle will get stronger. The first few days, it'll feel a little uncomfortable and you'll hurt here. Like, but don't go crazy. The whole thing, never go crazy in meditation. Like, don't go... Because okay, you'll get sick. And something will happen. You'll get constipated. Maybe some of the three retreats. If you misplace the focus, you like can't poop for 3 days.
Yeah. Yeah. Usually, when you say the construct of the lower belly, I feel really like the perineum also contracted a bit.
No perineum. Yeah, not between your legs. not that part. Then you'll get constipation. Okay, so don't try to tighten that. Not perineum, lower belly. We say four chin, four chin below the belly button. So everybody's belly button is different. Some people here, some people here. So it should be just below your belly button and very gentle. Okay, if you go really crazy, you're gonna do something. You won't be able to swallow or. Don't go crazy in meditation because you'll hurt yourself. Then you run around without your clothes on. We saw it.
You're following your breath with your mind.
Say again?
You're following your breath with your mind. The
yeah,
whole
yeah. Like. Don't pause. You don't have to pause. It becomes a cycle, okay? But try to feel this thing with your shoulders like angel, really like angel wings, you know, like you're open, but not like that, okay? I mean, but just in your mind, you're like, okay? What should be longer, the inhale or the exhale?
Exhale.
Yeah, always focus on the exhale. Then you won't go crazy, okay? If you're like, you'll get nervous and you'll have problems. It's very sensitive. All this machine is you can get cuckoo, okay? Yeah.
So if you're aware of it, it's following the breath all the way down to that point and following it back up versus a peripheral awareness.
Yeah, yeah. I'd like you to follow it pretty closely if you can. It's kind of more vague in the back on the inhale. There's just this kind of a feeling of almost like wings opening, you know. And then you press in, and then it comes out. Okay? Cool? Yeah.
So I guess I'm still not clear where the inhale originates.
Yeah, so don't think here. Don't think here. Don't think here.
Yeah.
Vague, someplace vague behind the back of your upper shoulders. Okay.
Can we consider the Svadhisthana as the turning point?
I would put it more in front of that. Because Svadhisthana, I see it on my spine. And I would like you to put it a little forward to that.
Should we feel the
Svadhisthana?
You know what I mean?
Yeah, as it comes up.
But in the back, it comes from
yeah,
the back.
In the spine.
The
mm-hmm.
hair and
you don't have to think like this. You don't have to think like that. Just kind of. You can later, but it's easier if you just like. You know.
And it runs from the back, right?
Not
from.
It's a half inch in front of the spine. This much in front of the spine.
In front, you mean?
Yeah. What do they call it in medicine?
Anterior.
This side of the spine. Yeah. Yes.
You say the chi prana from the two sides and gather in the middle channel.
Yeah.
And the place of the dantian.
Yeah, at the dantian below your navel.
It comes up through the root chakra and comes to a dantian or directly to a dantian.
It comes down. I want you to feel it like this. And then, you know, like under the sink, there's hot water and cold water, and they connect to the drain.
Yeah.
Under the sink, it goes like this. So down below your navel, the two side channels connect to the central channel like that. It looks like, it looks like that. You see? So the two side channels come down, and they connect to the central channel. Okay. Below the navel, yeah. That's where you're going to press in. But don't get too clear on it. Don't make it too complicated because you'll get a stomach ache or something. let it be a little vague, okay? You ready to try inhaling? Angel inhales, and then focused exhale. We're not meditating yet. We're just getting ready. Okay, maybe tomorrow we meditate. Okay. Okay, so we have two meditations so far. What's the first one? Yeah, focus on your body like a stone, like a statue. That's going to be like 20 minutes. And then this one you're going to do, and then I'm going to teach you some Jing Kan Jing meditations today also. Okay, ready? Here we go.
One more question?
Yes, please. Yeah.
When you were saying that push slightly your lower abdomen.
Yeah. Yeah, no muladhara, no perineum. You know when a yoga teacher says pull your navel towards your spine? That's pretty much it, okay. But don't go crazy because you'll hurt something. You won't be able to poo-poo for 3 days. Okay, don't never do extreme things. Okay, just relax. Fang song. Okay, if you feel nervous. Stop, go for a walk. If you feel shaky, stop, go for a walk. Don't continue, just quit right away. Because I have a friend, he's Michael Wick, you know him. He did it wrong in 1972. He's still sick. He's still sick, you know him. He's like this, you know. My Lama taught him this thing. And he said, don't do too hard. And he did it too hard. He was in howl. And he's still sick. Okay, how old is he? He's like 70 now.
Yeah.
And he's still a little bit shaky. Okay, so don't go crazy. If you feel anything, stop. Make yourself a big popcorn. No, oil is very good. Okay, if you feel nervous or something, have greasy noodle. Lots of olive oil, lots of, okay? And then everything, relax. Okay, but if you feel like this, then you have to stop. You have to stop. Okay, go for a walk.
How long you have to do it to really, like, got sick or something?
He did it for weeks. He did it for 6 weeks or something without my teacher there. When my teacher went away, he did it. My teacher said, don't do it too hard. He did it too hard. I think it was about 2 months. So don't worry. In 3 days, you're not going to get sick. You might get constipation. Okay, you ready? This is the last one, okay? Nice angel wings and come out through the forehead. And do not wrinkle the forehead and do not tighten the forehead. Keep it loose, okay? And this is just slight, you know? It's like a butterfly. What do you call butterfly?
Ude.
Okay. There's one coming up in the Jing Kan Jing. Okay. Breathe down through your wings. Press the lower belly. The exhale comes up to your spine and out your forehead. And just enjoy it, okay? I'll tell you when to stop, you don't have to worry. I won't leave you here. okay. You can relax. Yes. Let's do about 10 minutes at Diamond Cutter, and then we'll take a break. Michael and Melissa made you green drinks and some OJ and some ginger tea, okay? So we left, the Buddha was just going into meditation, right? He washed his feet, put away his bowl, and sat down on the cushion that the gods had put there for him on the floor to be humble. And then the sutra says he collected his thoughts. Ngumbaduchepa, Sem Ngumbaduchepa, he collected his thoughts. Did you get the text or the sutra?
Well, I did get it, but didn't have time to print it.
Okay,
like
so tomorrow.
In Chinese, so maybe Stanley has it in Chinese.
Can you get it ready for tomorrow?
It's hard to do without talking.
Well, talk as much as you have to get
it
done.
Do you have it in four languages?
The Dalai Lama?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
Okay, you guys work it out.
Oh, give it to Michael Pong. Yep.
One of my bosses used to say, do the necessary. That's all. He's saying, do the necessary, go out for coffee. Okay. then what does he collect his thoughts on? And Master Kamala Shila says, on the Dungyun Michepa. So Dungyun means his lineage, parampara. Michepa means it should not be interrupted. So his past prayers to come to this world and help people. Then, you know, what does the Buddha think about after breakfast? He's thinking, how can I prevent my lineage from being broken in this world? How can I continue my teaching lineage on this planet? Because that was what I always wanted. I wanted to start a teaching lineage, and then I wanted it to continue on. So that's his first thought during the meditation. Then suddenly 1,250 monks show up. Okay? It's confusing in the Tibetan because it's Tong Nyi Gyang Apchu. So normally, how many thousands comes after the thousands, like Ge Tomba? No, that's not right. Anyway, it's a confusing number. It's 1,250 monks show up. Along with great bodhisattvas, along with a great number of great bodhisattvas. So Master Kamala Shila, he's like Judson Kopp, he's like, how come he gives the number for the monks, but he doesn't give the number for the bodhisattvas, you know? Why does he say exactly 1,250 monks came, and then he doesn't tell you how many bodhisattvas? And he says, well, obviously, bodhisattvas having committed to helping all people, some of them are going to be busy out teaching in Kazakhstan or southern China, or, you know, the bodhisattvas, because they agreed to help everybody. We don't know how many are going to show up because they're out on missions. They're out helping people. The monks, these monks are not like bodhisattvas. They just show up. They live around there. There's 1,250 monks, and they all came. But the bodhisattvas, some of them were out on missions to help other people. So that's why there's no exact number for the bodhisattvas. Then he goes into some cool stuff if you care about the scriptures, you know. He's writing in Sanskrit, right? And he gives some comments about why monks are called bhikshu. Okay, so bhikshu, say bhikshu.
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 Means monk, full monk. And that's a female monk is?
Bhikshuni.
Bhikshuni, yeah. So you can't add an I to a U, so you put an N between. Bhikshuni, okay. So why are they called bhikshu? Then the verb, Sanskrit is built on roots. There's 800 roots. If you memorize 800 roots on the bus going to New York, you can generate Sanskrit. It's generative grammar. You can generate the whole language if you know the roots without seeing the words. So Bhikshu is normally explained as what? What's big?
Beggar?
Yeah, normally they say beggar. Kamala Shida says, I don't like that. That's not correct. He says Bhikshu is the desiderative case of bug, which means to share. Or, it means to divide up. So Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavad, means you have your blessings. You get your share of blessings. It's similar to Kalden in Tibetan. Okay. Like you get your share. So bhaga, the root bhag, which sometimes has a prenasal bhang, means to cut or to divide or to share. And all the words like branch comes from that, which means to branch. And fragile comes from that. And fractiles and franga, the Latin to branch or to break. Vagina comes from that. It means to split. And so bhaga means your share or to split. Then he says bhikshu, which is desiderative, which means a strong desire to split. In Sanskrit, you double the verb and you add a su, so it becomes bhikshu. And so he says bhikshu means divorced from their mental afflictions, divided from their mental afflictions, okay? Which means all monks and nuns should be totally stable and happy. But anyway, pretty much, they're working on it. So he explains bhikshu. And they come in a mahasanghena, right? In the form of a great number of sangha. Then he says, did you know what sangha means? And I always assumed it was S-A-M, which means together, and G-A, which means to come together. And the Greek word is synagogue comes from that. So sangha and synagogue are related. But there's a problem, because the G is G-H-A. And that G-H-A in Sanskrit is the verb for hun. It comes from hun, which means to strike or to cut. Ahimsa comes from that. The word gun comes from that. So hun means to hurt somebody. So Kamala Shida is concerned that it's G-H-A, and he says, you got to understand, when you have a strong group of practitioners together, nobody can hurt them. Sangha. Okay? Yeah, I like it. He's really cool. Then he says, why we call it Mahasangha? Either because there's a lot of people there, or the monks and nuns who are there, the group, the community, is tight. So it's not only a lot of monks and nuns and students, but they're tight. They're strong. Maha. They're big because they're strong. They're tight. They work together. Okay, so they showed up. Then they all come over to Lord Buddha, and it's not clear, but it seems like he taught the whole sutra in a state of meditation or something, like the Heart Shinjing, similar. Okay, so first everybody comes, and each monk puts his head on the feet of the Buddha. Each monk touches their head to the feet of the Buddha, and then they circle the Buddha three times, which is respectful. Okay, and then they sit down. So this is showing respect to the teacher. And American people freak out if the people are prostrating to the teacher. They say, "Oh, this is a cult, and there's a guru." But it's very normal for Buddhists to show respect to a teacher, and it's very necessary. Okay, so I will say the Americans just have to get used to it. You know, we are not what they were before. We're different. It's a new thing. We do some other things, and they're okay. They don't hurt anybody. You bow down to your teacher. This is the Buddhist custom, okay? But because of the other thing, we don't want to freak people out. You can just go like, nah. No. You know, if the people are all going to freak out if you get down on the floor, then you should respect their... You shouldn't mess up their crystal lake. Okay. All right. Then one of the monks, whose name is Subhuti, which in Tibetan is Rabjor, we had a Mongol monk in New Jersey named Rubjor, and it's a corruption of Rabjor. And he stands up and he drops his sen. Okay, watch Gelse. No, just this mainly this one. So he drops the robe from his right shoulder, which is called Sarlabhum. He drops the shawl, which is a sign of respect. So it means he's going to ask a question. So he drops the shawl. He goes down on his right knee. He genuflex. He kneels down, and then he joins his palms. So these are three customs for a Buddhist who's going to ask a question. Okay, they drop their, like, you're not allowed to wear a hat. You know, it's better. You take off your hat or you drop your sen, and then you go down on your right knee, and then you join your palms. And in Buddhism, we put the thumbs inside. Okay. That's another thing you can fight with Hindus about if you want to. Okay. It means my hands are not empty. I have something to offer. Okay. And then you... Then he asks a question. Okay. But that whole scene, the Master Kamala Shila says, the whole point of everything in this sutra has a purpose. Everything that happens in the sutra has a purpose. If you have a really good training in Buddhism, this sutra is a lam rim. Mm-hmm. Everything is happening for a reason, in order. You know? And if you can follow the Buddha's, you know, LSD mind, you know, There's a reason why everything's happening. You know, nothing's extra. Nothing's by accident. You must respect the teacher or you won't get any teaching. Okay? You can't go there and say, oh, hi, how you doing, man? You know? Like, you have to be respectful. And after many years, I lived with my teacher for 25 years. In the same house. It's hard to be respectful when you live with somebody all the time. Anyone who's ever been married knows that. And it was hard for me to be respectful all the time. And then one day I realized respect is not outside. It's affection. It's affection. We were like an old married couple. You know, he'd say, I'd say, That means I feel like having a tea. That means, give me a break. I'll make one in a while. But there's an affection to the whole thing, okay? So I think respect without affection is, to me, it's hollow. I don't like it. These people who are like, oh, am I? You know, and then you say, would you mind putting a curtain on these two windows by tomorrow? And they're like, no, I'm beauty. Then it's not respect, okay? Seiji, you got that? You and Nick? Just a couple of thumbtacks. Okay. Nothing fancy. And then there's an affection. They're like, yeah, cut me some slack, Geshe-la. Like, let me do it by the day after, okay? Like, but there's a sweet relationship, and not this sterile respect without affection. Okay, so the point here is that before a teaching can happen, the student must show some affectionate respect for the teacher. Okay, and that might involve, you know, making a dirty joke or something. That's okay. You know, like a poo-poo joke or something. You know? That's okay. That's better than this if you're nervous and possessive, you know, of the teacher. That's very unpleasant, you know. But if you're just like, hey, Geshe-la, you want to go out for a milkshake? We won't tell anybody. I'm like, yeah, let's do it. Okay?